how do you establish your company's reputation as an employer, and how to compare that to your competitors. This is where the Employer Brand Index comes in. We find out what's been said about your company in the context of employment. We analyze the patterns and deliver an actionable report with a final score. You'll know what part of your strategy is working, what part isn't working, and how it's progressing over time. Do you want to establish an employer brand baseline just like GE and Unilever? Go to employerbrandindex.co.
Hejsan svejsan! It's Jörgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. After tough times, mergers and acquisitions, American Airlines has been making major changes with the vision of restoring the company to the greatest airline in the world. Now then, the thing is, your customer experience will never be better than your employee experience. So how are they doing this? By focusing on their people and their employer branding, of course. Let's learn more in this week's expert interview. Carrie Corbin, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Very good, thank you. So please let our listeners know who you are and what you do.
Carrie Corbin, I lead the talent attraction, employer brand, and diversity recruiting for American Airlines. I've been here right at 2 years, and I've been in the HR industry for about 20 years, with the past 10 predominantly focused on the talent attraction and brand space.
Great. And how would you describe the culture at American Airlines, and what's your story? What made you join the company?
So it's an interesting journey, given where I was when I was at AT&T. It was actually a big motivator for why I took on the role at American Airlines. So American has about 110,000 employees, and we're definitely in an interesting place when I joined, but that's precisely why I wanted to take this on. They are a well-known legacy consumer brand. They were post-merger with US Air, and in a heavily unionized environment and also a pretty regulated industry. So those two factors actually make joining cultures, post-merger, a much longer and maybe a little bit more of a painful process. When I compare that to what my role was at AT&T, they were merging with Singular and SBC, and both are companies that have been around for a while. We actually just celebrated our 90th year. I guess we're probably 92 now, because I think we did that my first year. Whereas, AT&T is actually 140 years old. So they are definitely companies that have stood the test of time. But the opportunity to completely rebuild a brand identity post-merger in a strong consumer brand like that, it's something that I'm fortunate to be uniquely qualified for, given that I've already done that once at AT&T. But I also love the challenge of building teams and organizations. And, in this situation, I have the benefit of having, very specific experience to know, what works and what doesn't, and where to spend my energy up front, compared to where we did a lot more trial and error, with AT&T. Frankly, it was a little bit like stepping back in time. When I joined, but we've made huge strides in the past 2 years, and overall, we have an employee culture, with people who love the aviation industry. They love their jobs. They love their free flight benefits. That's obviously a pretty unique perk to the industry. And then overall, our leadership teams really have come together, and they know that they need to continue to work to connect the cultures to get us to that place truly of one American, and work to minimize the legacy mindsets of us versus them, which, when you have, a big legacy company that has been around this long and that has been through multiple mergers, as both companies have, it's very easy to almost hold on to your identity of your legacy company. And, it's it's funny to watch because some of these, it's almost like they have alumni groups for, you know, the company that is no more. And so, you know, can it just making that, you know, finding the way to not necessarily erase that history, but embrace that history and still be able to come together and unite for the One American is just, you know, it's a very cool opportunity to be in the front lines of that and helping drive that change. You know, and we've had to consolidate all of our flight systems, you know, so that crews could work with each other across legacy airlines and fleet. We've just wrapped up our implementation of success factors for all of our HR systems. So we went live with recruiting first, actually, before we did all of the others. But we are now all on one system as a company with both our applicant tracking systems, our career sites, our HRIS systems, payroll, et cetera. So the nice thing with that is that what's coinciding with the wrapping that up is that we're in a place where we can formally kick off our employer brand development and, you know, expect to have the strategy completed by the end of the year.
Great. Okay. So talk us through the talent challenges for American Airlines. I assume many airlines have similar challenges, but so what are your specific ones?
Well, I think one of the common challenges that, you know, any consumer brand faces, and particularly with airlines, is that people tend to associate your jobs with the customer-facing positions. So in our case, It's, you know, flight attendants and pilots. When I meet somebody, if they ask where I work versus what I do, I'll tell them American Airlines, and I wait, and they say, "Oh, are you a flight attendant?" and then I tell them, "No, I'm a pilot," and I watch them, you know, squirm for a minute. But then, you know, I joke and say, you know, tell them actually what I do. And the irony is that I also receive diversity recruiting. So part of that is helping challenge some of the stereotypes of the female and male oriented roles. You know, but we also, when you think about that, the challenge that presents also is hiring for your corporate and professional roles. So if you think about technology roles, most developers aren't sitting around dreaming of going to work in an airline. You know, so this is one area where we know we have a better story to tell as we get in front of that talent. And, you know, we've really grown our IT organization just as a result of the merger and all of the work that has had to go into, you know, really rebuilding our enterprise systems. But in, you know, one of the other areas we also know is a challenge is, you know, the fact that the airlines as a whole struggled for several years in the U.S.
Yep.
And, you know, prior to my coming on board, you know, they didn't hire externally for years as an industry, you know, as they were just trying to stay afloat. And so when we came out on the other side, it's been an education process for our leadership to understand that we recruit in entirely different ways than what we did 15 and 20 years ago. You know, no longer can we be, well, we're American Airlines, everybody wants to work for us, because they've actually kind of forgotten about us as an employer in some markets. They see us, they know us as a consumer brand, but when you don't hire for so long, you just aren't seen as a major employer in the area. You know, and they were still doing, you know, post and pray when I got here. So, you know, there were some things that we needed to clean up really quickly, but, you know, to fix that. But really understanding, you know, just how social and digital media has truly changed the landscape, you know, not to mention things like the fact that we have five generations in the workforce now and that they all communicate differently. All of those things play a part in the challenges, you know, as we're recruiting. You know, and then we have one other one that, again, is not probably unique to us as an airline, but it is, but, you know, it's something that, and probably multiple industries are facing it to an extent, but, you know, we hire in positions in which we know there is a dwindling supply of talent. So pilots and mechanics, for example, and, you know, and in part because, you know, from a workforce development standpoint, you know, we've stressed our children for the past 20 to 30 years that, you know, thou shalt go to college, and have almost, you know, shunned trade schools and vocational schools. And now many of our teams are hitting retirement age, which, you know, I kind of joke that my college economics professors were right about the baby boomers retiring. They just might've been a little delayed in their timeline. But, you know, we have, pilots have a mandatory retirement age of 65 per FAA regulations. You know, and our mechanics have to have their A&P license, which is aircraft and power plant. And you have to have a certain amount of experience in both of those areas to even be able to get the license. And then you have to have some work experience to be able to come into our roles. You know, and because we are a major airline, but we also wholly own 3 regional airlines. And so their supply is also a concern for us, because if we don't have mechanics or if we don't have pilots, our planes don't fly. And so we are looking at, you know, really long term, how do we work to build those pipelines proactively and really get in front of that talent before we actually start to feel the crunch.
Yeah, great. Okay, so tell us about your employer brand strategy and also the driving force behind it. Is it because you've merged and you have a group of companies? Are you trying to pull everything together? Or, you know, how did it come about?
Well, so again, when we didn't hire for so long, the company was truly in survival mode of, you know, going, you know, post 9/11 and then going through staving off bankruptcy for so many years and then finally doing it and then going through mergers. And, you know, you have a little bit of that starts to create a culture of kind of every man for themselves somewhat, mm-hmm. right? Because people are just trying to keep their job and stay afloat as a company. So that tends to stifle, you know, some of your creativity and innovation as a company. And so as we're, you know, our recruiting model ended up being predominantly outsourced. And so there was really no strategy to that. So they basically spent a year before bringing me on board of rebuilding the recruiting organization and getting most of that function in-house. And then that's where I've come in and focused more initially on building those foundational elements. And so, you know, employer brand is really, it's overarching over the scope of most of what I'm building, but I'm really looking at, you know, I've got the COE functions for recruiting strategy. So I'm building our diversity recruiting model and building, you know, our candidate experience, you know, through onboarding to new hire. And I've got responsibility for our metrics so that as we're building everything we, you know, have the ability to understand what our baselines are so that we can actually show some successes along the way. And then, of course, moving out of that, I also have the sourcing team. But moving out of that post and pray model, you know, one of my first, you know, functions was really building more of that recruitment marketing as an interim state while we got things stabilized so that we could focus longer term on the employer brand. So, you know, automating a lot of our, you know, all of our job postings and to our media, you know, using programmatic and pay-per-click and, you know, getting at least some basic creative in place that's consistent. And, you know, like even with things like career fairs there are, you know, as much as nobody likes to do them, we still have to. For us, we're a government contractor and there's a certain amount of outreach that we need to do. We've been working on let's manage our brand presence better on campus and with our other efforts while we also work to do more of a make our own market model where we're directly connecting with talent from an outreach perspective versus spending a lot of unnecessary time at career fairs. But in the process of doing that, you know, our teams were basically using our booth and creative from our sales team. And so, like, funny story, you know, we're going to some events and we ended up actually at a diversity event where our booth actually had a picture of our tail, the tail of the airplane. And it had the statement, redder, whiter, bluer than anyone else. And that's probably not the appropriate message that we need to be putting out there for going to diversity events. You know, so it's just, there's a need there to make sure that we have things that at least are jobs branded, that talk about the career opportunities, just at a minimum, you know, so that we had, you know, getting handouts in place and, you know, takeaways that are something other than just, you know, trash and trinket, you know, pens and notebooks. It's, you know, actually giving them, hey, here's the career path to become a pilot or a developer or whatever, and making sure we have some of those resources in place, because we really had nothing. And so that's one of the reasons why I talk about the difference between recruitment marketing and employer brand, because there is definitely a difference. And, you know, the recruitment marketing as a whole will be dramatically improved once we get that employer brand strategy developed. But that doesn't mean we couldn't wait on that brand piece in order to still go out and tell the story and still do the marketing and still do, you know, curate content and get in front of talent and talk about the culture here and the careers. So that has been really our initial focus while we were getting through all of getting our technology ramped up. And, you know, but like our career site is still pretty basic. And I was very, very proud of, you know, what we built at AT&T with our career site. And it's always been, you know, an award-winning site. We took a lot of risk with it early on, you know, so to come in and have this kind of skeleton of a site. But I was here, within my first month, and they're like, we've got to get it in a test mode and get it up and running. And, you know, so it's got a lot of generic copy and doesn't have a lot of diversity in the pictures, because they hadn't done a lot internally to do even employee photo shoots. And, you know, I had to throw something together basically to get to at least get us to a better state than what we were, but we still know we have a lot of work to do. And so we've actually just gone through our RFP for employer brand, and we have selected PH Creative as our partner. And they will actually be at eBrainCon as well. And we're really going to take the time to work to focus on, making sure that our story or that our focus is focused on both the employee experience and the full life cycle of the employee, not just talent attraction. I think that's another key piece that I really, you know, want to stress when we have that conversation about the difference between recruitment marketing and an employer brand, because when employer brand is driven from a TA function, you know, yes, your TA, you know, your job seekers are generally your biggest stakeholder, but anything that we do, we've got to make sure resonates with our employees. And we want to make sure that, you know, whatever we are putting out to job seekers doesn't create an environment or experience or a picture or, you know, inspiration of something that's not the reality when they walk in the door. And so by, you know, we're really taking the time to do a significant amount of discovery internally. When we have such a culture that has been here for so long too, that's also really important, because we don't have a retention issue. You know, we kind of joke that we hire for life, partly because we have so many union employees, partly because people really love their flight benefits, and two, just because this is the culture that people know and they love, and, you know, and they've dedicated their careers here. And we're as old as we are, that's easy for that to happen. And we still had a lot of that same environment at AT&T, where people had been there for a really long time. So we want to understand, you know, we want to be able, when we build our EVP, we want to be able to answer that question for both employees and job seekers, that the what's in it for me if I work here. And we really need to hear that from the employees in order to authentically shape how we're going to share that with our job seekers, but make sure that it comes full circle so that they're able to continue experiencing that same brand journey throughout their career. And it's not something that just stops, you know, at the hiring process.
So that's really interesting. Do you think there is a risk of having an inverted retention problem, as in if you're seen as you hire for life, then perhaps the people that stay are not the ones who are the most, most ambitious in their careers? They might jump ship after a couple of years and in order to jump up the career ladder. We work with a company that has this problem, that they feel that they're actually retaining the wrong people.
Yeah, and I should probably see if I could go trademark the phrase that I've coined since I've been here, but instead of regrettable turnover, I joke that we probably have regrettable retention.
Yeah.
And because that's the thing, when you have people that are essentially handcuffed to their jobs and union environments, you know, they know that they're promoted more on tenure than they are on performance a lot of times. And they get those raises based on tenure, not necessarily performance. And so it handcuffs them, because if they were to leave and start over at another airline or another company that's also union, they start back at the bottom of the ladder, regardless of their experience. So that's part of what incentivizes people to stay, because they make good money. And so if those folks, you know, don't have the best employee experience and don't love their jobs, and, you know, and or could even be described as toxic, we know that impacts how our other employees that have to work with them feel. But it also, for our customer facing roles, you know, as we know, your customer experience will never be greater than your employee experience. And so that's part of the reason why we're putting such a big emphasis on the employee experience piece of this, because, you know, as an organization, we have a customer experience organization. We don't have an employee experience organization. We have a typical people, HR, operations type focus, and we have some of our, you know, like employee comms that fit within other parts of the business. And so how we've built our teams for this is, I've made sure I've been planting the seed for a while with all of the different stakeholder groups in the company that have employee touch points, that, hey, this is coming, and wanted to make sure they were on board, because, again, I didn't want to try to drive this from a TA level and then say, you know, go tell our organizational development team or our comm team how they needed to communicate with employees. This needs to be a cohesive team effort that we truly have the buy-in at all levels, that not only are we doing that discovery piece, but then as we build that strategy, that we keep that in mind. And so if we can start to make our employee experience more consistent, and we can maybe even identify some of those pockets where we have some of those challenges, you know, the hope is that we'll have some strategies that come out of that will allow us to, you know, help change that experience for the better, even for those people that may not love their jobs right now. You know, and you know, it's interesting. We've had Simon Sinek actually come to our leadership conference for the last 2 years, and he tells a great story about a real life experience for him, where he's in Vegas, and he's getting coffee, and he ends up talking to this barista because he's so enamored that this guy seems to really love his job, and he's at the Four Seasons. And so he's asking the guy about his job, and he's, you know, hey, do you like working here? And he's, do you like your job? And he's like, I love my job. And he's so emphatic about it. And so, you know, Simon's talking with him and jokes that he spent a really long time buying a cup of coffee. But as he's talking to this guy, he goes, well, what is it about your job that you love? And he goes, well, because I can be myself. And I have a supportive leadership. He goes, managers walk by all day and they ask me how they can help me. And they make me feel important in my role, and they empower me. And then he went on to tell him that he's also a barista at Caesar's Palace. And he said, that environment's very different. And that there, when the managers walk by, they're trying to catch you doing something wrong. And in doing that, he has learned to keep his head down, do his job, not talk a whole lot, and, you know, do the things that he's supposed to do and check off his list and go home. And so the point with that too is that some, you know, a lot of times we hear managers talk about getting the right people on the bus, and that sometimes you have to ask, is it the people or is it the bus? Because of, like, in this coffee, in this barista's guy situation, same employee, but very different perspective of that employee based on, you know, which organization he's at because of the way, you know, he interacted with the leadership. And so that's, you know, the hope with some of this, that if we have any of those issues, right, we need to be able to empower our employees. Instead of looking for our employees who are breaking the rules, you know, we need more to be able to empower our employees to know when to break the rules. And that, you know, that could be the difference in how somebody feels about their job. And, you know, and the struggle with that being in a union environment is that a lot of times, you know, it tends to be very regulated and rules-based. And, you know, and I've heard some of our gate agents tell people, I would love to help you, but I can't do that. I'll get in trouble. And when what it should be is, you know, Simon actually gave another example where he said, you know, if you're risking your plane being delayed because the food car, not all of the food has been delivered, you know, he heard a situation once where the flight attendant just gets on the mic and just says, hey, you know, we're still waiting on four meals. You know, does everybody on here, you know, but that's risking delaying our flight. And how about if, can we get four volunteers for people that don't need their meals and we'll give you drink tickets to bed, you know, and or drinks or whatever. They get their four volunteers. They say, sayonara, they forget about the food and they get off on time. And the customers have a good experience as a result of that because the flight attendant was empowered to make a decision that, you know, made a better experience all the way around, both from an employee perspective, but also for a customer. So that's some of the stuff that we're hoping, you know, as we build this strategy and as we do our discovery, that we'll be able to bubble up where some of those challenges may be, so that even separate from the brand development piece, my leadership teams who are involved in these conversations might have a newfound awareness of where they can go and, you know, make some changes in their organizations.
So in your opinion, this is employee experience part of employer brand or vice versa? Or
are they? Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's why I make the distinction between the recruitment marketing and the employer brand, because if your employer brand should be it's your identity as an employer, which is different than what your consumer or product brand, you know, or service brand is, you know, and as a corporation, as a company, companies have learned to be very narcissistic in the story that they tell from a consumer perspective, because they're always trying to prove that they're the best, you know? And so for years that's rubbed off on the story that we even tell on our career site, because all we're doing is talking about how we're so great instead of answering that question of what's in it for you. But again, you know, that we want to be able to help people picture themselves working here. And that's not just doing realistic job preview videos and to get people to self-select out if they want to see that they don't want to work the night shift on the gate, you know, outside in the rain in Chicago in the winter, you know. It's understanding, okay, truly what is my experience going to look like long term as if I work here. You know, not just what's the job, but what is the culture, what is the experience, what's in it for me, you know. And so I don't think you can do that without caring for that employee experience in the process. Now, I know where some of that confusion comes from, though, because, you know, if you think about, I tend to break it into two things. Employer brand is the identity, is the noun, right? It's the who you are.
Yep.
And the employer branding is it's your action verb. And as part of that employer branding, a heavy focus of that tends to be the recruitment marketing. So recruitment marketing is still a very big, you know, beneficiary of the development of that strategy and that story and your identity. So they're definitely hand in hand, but you can still do recruitment marketing. You kind of have to, whether you have a developed employer brand or not. And same thing with employee communications, right? But if we have a defined employer brand story and we know who we are as a company, we should be sharing that with our employees, and it should be something that resonates with them, and it should be something that inspires pride, you know, in the people that work for you, and that's what helps drive employee advocacy. And then if you've got a volunteer army of employees that are sharing your jobs and your culture with their friends and family and on their social networks, then it makes my job from a recruitment marketing perspective that much easier. So it's definitely interrelated, but I do see a, you know, definite separation in, you know, how we approach the strategy for all of it.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, right. So, have you got any hard lessons that you can share with us from your employer brand career?
Well, that was one of them, because when we were at AT&T, we started with recruitment marketing and we kind of backed into what we were doing with employer brand.
Right.
And, you know, and we made some mistakes along the way. And some of that was just being innovative and taking risk. And, you know, there were good lessons learned, you know, because we were the first company to build an app for jobs at the company level versus, you know, at a job board level. And we had it for about a year, and this was before anybody had the ability to do mobile apply. But, you know, at the same time, we built a mobile optimized career site. So this was like back in 2009. And being a mobile company, we should have been one of the first to do this, right?
Yeah.
But within a year, we realized, okay, the app was really, it's taking up space on people's phones and they still can't apply through it. So let's just kill that and really focus on building out that mobile optimized, you know, and later on mobile responsive career site to just create that good candidate experience. Like a lot of people, we, you know, experimented with QR codes and just different things that, we were willing to fail first, if you will, on some of those things, again, because of the focus on mobile. But if I had it to do over again at AT&T, I would have loved for us to have taken more of a holistic, you know, brand approach, and, you know, that was more inclusive of our leadership teams across the company. And so we got feedback through that process, through different iterations, you know, of where, like, you know, gender neutral language, you know, it's the funny part is that my boss and I, who started the TA team at AT&T, you know, in that post-merger world, we were two women. And as we built all of this, you know, over the course of a couple of years, we started getting feedback that some of our verbiage was off-putting to women. Because we were trying to help position AT&T, you know, as people still saw it as a landline phone company, you know, just old school legacy company. But the majority of our jobs were really technology and digital and, you know, mobile focused. And so we had the same problem there where people weren't going, hey, I want to go work in IT at a phone company. Yeah. So, And getting that feedback was really interesting because we had put a lot of work into developing, you know, our kind of our personas and the experience. And, you know, when we had some catchy headlines, you know, like ridiculously innovative for 130, you know, 5 years or whatever. But then the copy that went with that, you know, that's where we had to learn to tone that down. And, you know, again, had we done more of a, you know, more of a internal employee experience focus early on, I think a lot of the tone that we used would have been different. I also think we would have been a little earlier on, we would have been able to focus more on that true employee experience focus versus more of that RJP focus. So we did the realistic job previews, but we didn't really have a defined career path. You know, we really couldn't tell what that life cycle was. And, you know, and that made it a little bit harder for us in some respects. But, you know, as a focus, as a profession, you know, employer brand really hasn't been around that long. You know, so it's something that some of us that have been involved early on have had to figure out as we go.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think that's, you know, that's part of why I'm so passionate about why the employee experience needs to be such a big part of that, because we were having to compensate for the fact that it wasn't, you know, as we were trying to figure out what we were doing, you know. That's when I think about coming into this role and understanding some of those lessons learned early on. And, you know, that's one of those, and taking the time to do it right. You know, one of my favorite sayings has always been, if you don't have time to do it right the first time, when are you going to have time to do it over? And so I've been very deliberate and waiting to be able to actually start a very intensive employer brand discovery process and development, rather than just bringing in a recruitment marketing firm that has a side of employer brand that can help us build a creative theme and call it a day. In fact, I actually got feedback from some of our vendors that our RFP is probably the most intense they've been through, because I want to see what they can do, you know, and I want to see what they come back with. And, you know, I'm almost telling them the way I want the process done and giving them the answers in that respect, because I wanted to find out true capabilities, you know. And as a result of that, we had a couple of vendors drop out and just say, yeah, we don't do that. But it helped me get past the sales pitch of, yeah, we do employer brand, to really find out, you know, whether they really could do the full soup to nuts brand strategy.
Great. Okay. And if we turn to technology, what's your EB tech stack? Could you mention any top pieces of tech?
You know, one of the things that I'm struggling with right now is that there was a decision made before I got here on what CRM and talent community that we have. And that's something that I feel like is very, very important. And so for me, I see that as a challenge, because we need to do something better. And I've actually been working. Jerry Crispin actually built a survey for me just based on a, you know, Facebook post that I had made in one of our groups asking about recruitment marketing with your CRM, because we're seeing, you know, Smashfly has positioned themselves that way, and we're seeing a couple of others that do some things good and other things not so well. And from a recruitment marketing perspective at CRM, that's been around a while, that I, you know, I truly feel like there are a lot of things that we should be able to execute through that platform as a whole that nobody's really doing exceptionally well yet. But I feel like that's critical. And, you know, with that is truly the ability to on the fly, be able to develop landing pages, quickly grab your, your talent pipeline to market to, and whether that's, you know, with email campaigns or text campaigns, what events, however we're doing that. And that's, you know, really where I just in full transparency, that's where we're struggling right now. So we're, you know, and I'm trying to get out of piecing that together. So like we have Yellow for our event management piece, which I actually love because, it's so hard to get ROI with career fairs. And, you know, that was something we started early on at American Airlines, where we built our own talent network and we were using that as our opt-in for events so that we could then dedupe that data against, you know, one, we could market to them, but we could also dedupe those hires, you know, those against our hires to start to try to show some ROI for our events. You know, Yellow as a tool has a basic CRM and does some basic recruitment marketing that allows you to build an RSVP landing page, allows you to do email campaigns and text campaigns, but it's still event focused. But the amount of information that you can capture at an event and enabling you to, you know, capture resumes and make recommendations on the people you meet at the event is so simplified in there that, you know, I think it's probably my top tool right now, just because we haven't been able to transition as much away from events as I want, but we still spend a lot of money. So I want to be able to tie that there. But, you know, overall event management, CRM, that talent community, you know, that warm pipeline opt-in. I see, you know, I know a lot of people see those as almost the same thing. And I still technically see them as two separate things, because they've got a separate purpose on the front end with the talent community or talent network, with how you're engaging your candidates. And then, you know, being able to mine and source and reach out to that pipeline from a sourcing, you know, sourcing or recruitment marketing perspective, you know, in your CRM is just critical. And, you know, and especially in the US, and for those of us that are government contractors, and, you know, nobody's ever been good at mining an ATS. You know, when you've got a warm pipeline of candidates that have already expressed interest in your jobs, they're, you know, naturally the first people you should be reaching out to every time you have anything that you have is hard to fill or high volume or, you know, whatever the case might be.
Right. Yes. And you mentioned ROI there. Do you have any specific metrics for measuring ROI on employer brand? And if so, what might they be?
You know, that's part of what we're still developing, and I'm actually trying to build a more cohesive strategy around that. So, and what I mean by that is that because we were in disparate systems post-merger, it's really hard to get our baselines. So we've got, you know, the recruiting, you know, recruiting metrics are under me, workforce HRIS metrics are under a different team. Then you have the brand and marketing metrics, and then even your tools utilization, all of those things. So just understanding what you can get in the systems that you have, you know, has been a big challenge for us of just at least getting, that was our first challenge, I guess I should say. So, you know, one of the first things that we did though, is we've got a partnership with CEB, and their we have their corporate leadership council, and then their recruiting, what it used to be called recruiting roundtable. I'm dating myself a little bit. It hasn't been called that in a long time, but their recruiting module. And with that, they have an amazing hiring experience survey that is very automated through them, that you survey your new hires. You also survey your internal transfers, and then you survey your hiring managers. And you've got, you know, questions that are already, you know, validated for you. You're not trying to create things, but then, so you have some some questions that give you some benchmarks, but then you also have the ability to put in some custom questions. And so, you know, one of the things that I've always tried to measure is our ENPS of, you know, just asking that question at every stage of that process of, you know, how likely are you willing to refer friends and family if you're a new hire or an internal transfer to our jobs? And then from our hiring managers, it's how likely are you to recommend someone to work with our team? You know, and because that, knowing the candidate experience is such a big issue, you know, that one's an easy one, I think, to be able to measure. You know, and looking, obviously looking at your external brand sentiment and finding a way to be able to present that succinctly when we've got tools like Glassdoor and Indeed and LinkedIn, you know, and then just, you know, general brand perception on the, you know, on the internet. I think just knowing that what that sentiment is, and how positive or negative it is, what your ratings are, you know, all of those can factor into that. But you, because you get your likelihood to refer from those as well. So even if you don't have a survey, you could still essentially come up with an ENPS score just based on the likelihood to refer of the sample that you're getting, you know, from people that are answering that question on the sites. You know, and then I, from a recruitment marketing perspective, you know, you know, the easiest one to get to is just your cost per application, you know, by channel or source. But then, you know, getting to that cost per hire piece is so much more significant. But then, you know, that alone we know doesn't tell the story when we know that candidates a lot of times may go to, you know, 10 to 14 different sources when they're making that decision to apply for a job. So being able to truly track the candidate journey of applying and understanding their source of influence, you know, those two, when you look at cost per app, cost per source, or cost per app, cost per hire, and the source of influence, the three of those together are what are going to tell you the best story, you know, on the effectiveness of your recruitment marketing and your media, because that's where we spend the most money. So we want to be able to make sure that we're caring for that. You know, but then we also want to look at on the recruiting side, you know, for our diversity numbers, right, and understanding our diversity yield by channel, you know, and by the funnel. You know, when we're looking at our traffic that's coming into the website versus where people are applying, and then looking at the numbers that apply versus minimal qualified versus those presented on your slate to your hiring manager, and then who's interviewed, ultimately who's hired, seeing that funnel, but cutting that by your diversity and your channel along that funnel, to me, tells a more complete holistic story around where your gaps are and where you need to make some adjustments in your strategy.
You are going to be at the Employer Branding Strategies Conference in San Diego, so looking forward to seeing you there. What, just very briefly, what can the audience look forward to hearing you talk about?
So this is where I'm going to spend a lot more time truly talking. And I titled it Real Talk because I want it to be, it's going to be a little more facilitation and dialogue with the audience than, you know, what I traditionally do. But to really have the very real conversation around recruitment marketing and employer brand, because, you know, I'm a little concerned with some of the vendors in our industry that have a lot of influence, and they really push down that recruitment marketing path. And, you know, and there are a lot of newer people that are breaking into this field. That's what they're exposed to, is they're influenced by their vendors. And, you know, so I would want it to truly be a dialogue and answer people's questions and, you know, and help guide and influence that conversation. And, but, you know, through that process too, you know, also talking around, you know, how you get executive buy-in for employer brand, especially when you're talking at that level. It's a lot easier to do it for recruitment marketing than it is to get, you know, marketing and corp comm and all of the functions of HR leadership in the room together, and to involve them in, you know, a several month long process of rebuilding, you know, your brand, and, you know, even getting them to a place of being able to understand it, you know. So, I'm excited because it's, you know, I'm not talking a whole lot necessarily about American Airlines, just because we're still in that development phase, but also because I just still feel like there's a lot for us in the industry to come together on. And because there's so many people that are still going, well, I think employer brand means this, and well, I think it means this, and I think it's talent brand, and I think it's, you know, employee brand, and it's you know, and at some point we've got to quit doing that and trying to be the, you know, the leader in that, and we need to come together and start to develop some standards. And it's taken us a long time to get to that place with just talent acquisition. I'm hoping that we can do that a little quicker with employer brand.
Great. Fantastic. Okay. Final question. Where can people, our audience, our listeners, connect with yourself, Carrie? And also, where can they learn more about, well, American Airlines, I suppose, career opportunities and employer brand?
So the easiest way to find me is with most, you know, most of our social places. So I'm open to connections on LinkedIn, which is just Carrie Corbin, you know, as well as Facebook and Twitter. Although I don't tweet as often as I used to, unless I'm at a conference generally. But both of those are the Carrie Corbin. It's kind of a play on the fact that I used to be the alpha femme. And once I grew up and wanted to use my real name, we kept the the. But we, I do have a personal website, it's just carriecorbin.com, but I've resisted blogging or doing a whole lot to update that other than to say where I'm speaking. But then for American Airlines, we do have the jobs.aa.com is our career site. And then we have talent.aa.com is our talent community. And that's pretty much the best way to place to learn. Because we haven't done a lot to curate social content for American yet.
Watch that space, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Carrie.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, I hope that was useful. Everything Carrie and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. And I hope to see you in San Diego, where Carrie will be talking, and she'll be joined by many of the other interviews on this podcast. And, of course, the team here from Lean Humans will be flying over from London. So I hope to see you there. Now, how do you understand your company's reputation as an employer? Our approach is called the Employer Brand Index. Yep. We uncover everything being said about your company in the context of employment. We analyze this and we deliver an insightful and actionable report with a final score. To make this more interesting, we can add your talent competitors to this. So a good bit of benchmarking there. Our findings sometimes validate the perception that employer brand leaders have of their organizations. Sometimes there are surprises, both good and bad, but it doesn't stop there. To me, having a great employer brand means that you have to offer a great candidate experience, employee experience, and even alumni experience. Only when you use insights like these to take action to change the status quo will you actually be able to move the needle on your employer brand equity. Okay, so if that sounds useful for you, please check out employerbrandindex.co or just ping me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com. And also, if you want to stay up to date on all things employer brand, including articles, podcasts, events, etc., go to linkhumans.com and sign up to our newsletter. So it's a monthly newsletter. And you can sign up to it on the page there. Just scroll down and you'll see the sign up form. And finally, if you find this podcast useful, please, please, please do me a favor and write a review in Apple Podcasts. All I'm asking for is an honest review, and really helps us to reach more people. So many thanks in advance for taking the time to writing a review. And that is it for this week. Very good of you to tune in, and I look forward to catching up with you next time. Hey, doll!
What does it mean when you find bones on the moon?
No idea.
The cow didn't make it over.